debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you on this beautiful Monday here in Portland, Oregon. It is just an amazing time to be alive. Paul Krugman's lies. I don't know if you saw this in the New York Times. I'm going to get to that in a little bit. But I wanted to start out with a riff on a piece that I published on Alternet over the weekend. It went up, six, 8 hours ago at alternet.org. And it's titled, "The America I Knew is Pretty Much Gone." Actually, that's not the exact title. Let me pull it up. And "The America I Knew Has Almost Disappeared." There we go. And what's left of our democratic institutions are under siege. And it's not just our democratic institutions, it's our country. For example, and this is just by way of, you know, my example for the day, right? We all have them, right? In every field, in every industry, it's like, you know, we're not being dealt with as American citizens and as American consumers the way historically we have been. For example, the modern moving industry was really, literally created in the 1800s, in the early 1800s, when they had the Calistoga cars, the Calistoga, well, actually, there's a word for them. Hang on just a second, I'll get it for you. And Conestoga wagons is what they were called. This is around 1800. This is when Americans started moving west. And then the railroads happened, and in 1927, Arrow Mayflower Transit Company, which is today known as Mayflower, became the first company to be awarded a license for moving people by the Interstate Commerce Commission. And the way that this all happened was, in 1935, Congress passed what was called the Motor Carrier Act to promote, quote, fair competition. In 1948, the Reed-Bullwinkle Act was passed by Congress. And basically what these laws did is they said that if you're a moving company, you can't rip off your customers. Well, in 1980, they passed a new Motor Carrier Act that deregulated the trucking industry, the moving industry. And so, you know, deregulated by Congress. Now, this was Jimmy Carter was president. But this was, and there was this whole deregulation craze. And so now we're in a situation where, for example, on September 2nd, now today is October 16th, so September 2nd was a month and a half ago, a moving company picked up
both Louise and I's, all of our personal stuff, but also much of our office stuff, including the set for this show, which is a month and a half ago, and guaranteeing us delivery here in Portland between 9 and 21 days. So Louise flew out here and waited 2 weeks. Nothing happened. She came back to D.C. The company stopped taking our phone calls, stopped replying to our emails. She drove our car out here to Portland. Took 4 days to go all across the country with a dog and two cats to meet the moving van, and waited here another week. We still haven't heard from them. We have no idea where our stuff is. We have no idea even if our stuff is. And I'm talking about, you know, like a lifetime of baby pictures and everything else. It's just like, imagine, you know, this is, and I'm not complaining about this specifically. I might on another, in another show, but, because I mean, I'm looking at these people in California who literally lost everything. And, you know, what they're going through is so much worse than just, you know, being a month and a half without your stuff and, you know, sleeping on air mattresses and you know, basically not knowing where your stuff is. But, you know, I'm assuming it's coming. And I'm assuming that when it finally comes here, there's going to be some sort of, you know, ransom-taking behavior on the part of the movers, because this company, if you look at their Yelp comments, seems to have that as a history. But it's just, you know, prior to 1980, that would have been illegal. If a moving company contracted to do something, they actually had to do it. They were actually regulated. There were regulators, and there was, you know, and now not so much. So I'm looking at not just, you know, our example of just being screwed by a moving company or whatever. I'm not sure that we've been screwed yet. We've, 40 days without your stuff, 45 days, whatever it is, month and a half. But we see this all across the country. I mean, we see this in every industry. You see how the airlines are treating their customers these days. You see how banks are treating their customers these days, where people are routinely getting ripped off on their credit cards. They're routinely getting ripped off. I mean, rip-off is like the major business model in American business right now. And I would argue that this comes out of the deregulation fervor of the late 70s and the 80s. And yes, some Democrats bought into it, thought, well, maybe we should, you know, I mean, this is, keep in mind, this is like a 30-year effort. The Powell memo was in 1971. Although in 1980, that was only a decade later. But the destruction of America, of America's values, just absolutely shocks me. Paul Krugman, for example, and the fact that in declaring this war against America and American values, I mean, Bannon came out over the weekend, I guess it was, and just came right out and said that Donald Trump's defunding of the $7 billion of the cost-sharing payments, the CSRs, that this was an intentional plan to blow up Obamacare, right? A very specific and intentional plan to blow up Obamacare. This is not a test. This was not a political statement. It's just, we're going to do it. And people will die as a result of this. We know, I mean, you know, Harvard University documented so well that on average, prior to the Affordable Care Act, about 44,000 Americans every year were dying because they didn't have access to health care, or the access that they had was so expensive that they didn't use it, or the medications that they got were so expensive that they couldn't afford them. And that number appears to be down to, like, you know, maybe 15 or 20,000 Americans are dying every year now because they don't have access to health care. And most of those are in the red states that did not expand Medicaid. But blowing this up is just going to, it's going to devastate this country. So in my article, I started it out with, you know, President Jimmy Carter telling me on my radio show about the Citizens United decision. And I don't know if, Troy, do you have that as a regular clip? Jimmy Carter on democracy? No, it's all right. It's going to take you more than a minute. It's okay. Jimmy Carter said that, you know, I asked him, you know, what do you think about Citizens United? And he said, Citizens United violates the essence of what made America a great country and its political system. Now it's just an oligarchy with unlimited political bribery being the essence of getting the nominations for president or to elect the president. And the same thing applies to U.S. governors and senators and Congress members. So what we've seen is a complete subversion of our political system as a payoff to major contributors. This is the president of the United States, Jimmy Carter, 3 years ago on this program. Just coming right out and saying it. And this complete subversion of our political system grew in large part out of Richard Nixon appointing Lewis Powell. In 71, Powell wrote the Powell memo, encouraging the Chamber of Commerce to start getting politically active. In 72, Nixon put him on the Supreme Court. In 76, in the Buckley decision, the Supreme Court ruled that when billionaires or big corporations give money to politicians, and those politicians begin dancing to the tune of the billionaires and the big corporations, that is no longer considered bribery. That is now considered First Amendment protected free speech. Pretty bizarre, huh? We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And to America as we knew it. How has America changed in your life? We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, thanks for calling. It's on your mind.
Yeah, I'm a little younger than you, and I've just seen a, you know, gradual and maybe and sometimes a quick degeneracy from the times that I remember growing up, except for the fact that, you know, for a brief period of time, apparently it seemed like African Americans and other groups, diversity, you know, was, you know, coming to the fore, and that seemed like a good thing. But actually, you know, really we labor under, I guess, a capitalist system that is very aggressively capitalistic to the point where, you know, truth and justice really don't have much to do with it. It's all about money, legalism, how you can, you know, basically empower yourself over another person. It's really, in so many ways, just bankrupt. And I don't know how we're going to get out of it. We seem to be sliding in one direction. And people like yourself, I think, are doing a good service in trying to bring us away from it. And there's a lot of hopeful signs. But, you know, this is, you know, it's not a game of chess or anything. We're really, I mean, it's almost to the point where we better also start developing some kind of spiritual muscle, too, because you can stand on your head and spin and make all kinds of great arguments, not yourself. I'm not talking about just you, but a lot of people. I listen to Amy Goodman every morning, and she's making very excellent points. Now, how do we get out of it? That's the thing. You know, and so I'm hopeful because I think, what else do you have but hope in the end? You know, it is just glaringly different from the time I grew up as far as opportunities for people and whatnot. But I think most of it was built on a lot of wealth. We were the wealthiest country. We came out of two world wars, a shining, you know, beacon on a hill, and I don't know, at some point the wealthy just said, well, enough of this democracy stuff. We need to reassert ourselves over the population, and that's what they've done.
Yeah, it has been a takeover. It's really a remarkable thing, John, and it's not, it's like history. In fact, in my article for Alternate, I quoted Sam Clemens, Mark Twain, saying that, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. Whether he said it or not is a matter of debate, but it's typically attributed to him. And that we saw something very similar in the 1920s, that in the election of 1920, Warren Harding ran on the platform of less government in business, more business in government. In other words, deregulate and privatize. And which is essentially the same thing as Reagan. You know, it's like this, the cycle just kind of came around and we're still living in this Reagan period. And the deregulation leads to the airlines get to rip you off, the moving companies get to rip you off, the fast food companies get to serve you stuff that produces obesity and diabetes. The pharmaceutical companies get to make things that kill you and sell them and promote them and all that. It just goes on and on and on. And the banks, you know, and you know, Wells Fargo got busted for creating, you know, all these millions of phony accounts and charging people for them. And so they had to pay a fine. But now, you know, all the banks are funding a giant lobbying effort to eviscerate Dodd-Frank, which made it possible to, you know, which created the Financial Oversight Bureau that made possible the stopping of Wells Fargo. I mean, it's just all the efforts of corporate America seem to be focused on taking down the, you know, small d democracy, a functioning republic. It's just mind-boggling to me. John, I got to move along, but thanks for the call. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I wanted to talk about these subsidies that Trump is not paying on the Affordable Care Act, some of the policies that purchased on the exchange. The $7 or $8 billion is, first of all, you have to understand, this came as tax revenue collected from the pharmaceutical companies, but he's legally not, doesn't have to pay these subsidies because apparently Congress never specifically allocated these funds specifically for the subsidies.
Right, they authorized the executive branch to
in the U.S. Treasury impounded,
right,
doing nothing. Congress has never appropriated this money, so it can't be spent to do anything. They can't even give the money back. If the Republicans thought that was a good thing to do, to give the money back to the pharmaceutical companies. So Trump has done this for the sole purpose of wrecking things, just wrecking everything.
Yep.
Because while the Affordable Care Act is still in place, because the Republicans could not repeal and replace, the insurance companies that stay on the exchanges still have to sell those silver plans. This applies to the silver plans at the same rate as if they were getting the subsidies.
Yep.
So the choice is to do that and then raise premiums on regular.
This is Donald Trump throwing a tantrum and breaking things. Well said, Paul. Thank you for the call. Hey, Tom Hartman here with the Tom Hartman Program. You know I'm serious about my health, and so I'm doing something for it. You've heard me talking about Super Beets. I'm drinking Super Beets, circulation superfood powder that helps support my heart and healthy blood pressure, too. I have amazing energy, amazing stamina as well. The New York Times calls Beets fitness in a glass. With Super Beets, I get all the benefits without the bad taste or added sugar. Mix it in water or a smoothie for a jitter-free energy boost. You'll love the taste of Super Beets and feel results in as little as 20 minutes, guaranteed your money back. Try the original berry or black cherry. I like them both. If you haven't tried it yet, now is the time. Only for the summer, you can try Super Beets, maybe the early fall here. Try Super Beets for only $5.95. Here's how. Call now and get a free box of Super Beets with 10 packets to try and feel the results, plus two free indicator strips for monitoring your nitric oxide levels before and after taking Super Beets. It's just $5.95. You'll love the results, guaranteed. More energy, more stamina, support healthy circulation. What are you waiting for? Call 800-568-9889. That's 800-568-9889. Or go to tomsbeets.com. That's tomsbeets.com. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So what has happened to our country? And what direction is our country going? And how did we get here? It certainly seems to me that Reaganism is playing itself out the same way Hardingism played itself out in the 1920s. You get a boom followed by a bust. And Warren Harding, massive deregulation, massive privatization in the early 20s led to the Roaring 20s, which led to the crash of 1929. And I would submit to you, the Dow just hit 23,000, that we are in the roaring, whatever it is, aught 17. And that if the cycle continues, at some point it's going to be a real challenge. But I'm looking at these political cycles, too, and thinking, wow, this is way over the top. This is way over the top. Chaz in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Chaz, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, let me take you off a speaker.
Thank you.
Nasa Drovi, comrade.
Yeah. What's up,
yeah.
Chaz?
You realize that's just because we are the largest territory of Russia, not about anything else. Right?
Okay, all right.
Okay, listen, Republicans, conservatives are always banging on about freedom. Well, if you don't like it, move somewhere else. But you realize that like half of Republicans would be happy to live with a dictator ruling over them, right? A couple different polls have shown that.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask, well, you know, why would you forsake this freedom? And I ask, well, freedom for what? To go bankrupt medically? Is it freedom when old white men tell you what you can do with your uterus? When you've got the highest per capita and total incarceration rate in the world? Are you when you leave the house in a bulletproof vest? Did you see the story about this gal in Santa Rosa who had survived the Las Vegas shooting, got home and her house had burned down?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the NRA didn't get her. The global warming did.
The what?
The NRA didn't get her. Global warming did.
That's my point, Tom. I hated to pull the trigger so early in the week, but this is a compelling topic, and I appreciate your time.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for the call, Chaz. Well said. Denise in Chicago. Hey, Denise, what's up?
Oh, hey, Tom. I'm enjoying your conversation. And, you know, just the increasing of the incomes over the last 20 or so years, maybe more so where I'm at my age, I've been more cognitive and been seeing it. But I also just want to add another cultural aspect to it, and then I'll let you maybe give your insights at the end of the discussion. But I think, you know, it really starts with something that Trump did and has been very prominent out there with The Apprentice, television shows like Survivor, Big Brother, these dating shows where one individual girl gets the rose. And none of them really, from my perspective, have any kind of, you know, when they win Survivor, okay, you learn how to take out your friend. You learn how to take out anybody else so that you yourself individually are the, you know, the king, the queen, and the one who wins. And I think that has a lot to do with the psyche. And I've seen it played out in corporate America and offices, you know, where people have lost that team kind of concept, and companies are trying to get that back at the same time because there are so many volatile environments out there where people are only thinking of themselves. And I just think it kind of wraps up in your conversation. I don't want to keep going on, but I think you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't think someone who wins Big Brother should gain celebrity status. You know, what do they do?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a dichotomy. For
well,
me.
There's a fascinating post over at TPM this morning, Denise, in which the author is suggesting that there are two negotiating strategies, basically, when you're trying to accomplish something or when you're trying to compete with somebody. And one is the famous cliche of the win-win strategy. So, you know, we negotiate something, I get something, you get something, everybody gets something, we all win. The other is the win-lose strategy. The only way that person A knows that person B, or knows that they have won over person B, is if they destroy person B. And that apparently Donald Trump his whole life has used the win-lose strategy, that he has never been a win-win guy. And now we're seeing this applied to our country. And in our foreign relations, in our business relations, in our tax things, in our you know, political parties, Democrats versus Republicans, Donald Trump versus Bob Corker, you know, Donald Trump versus everybody. It's he doesn't understand how to do win-win things. And as a consequence, we're not in a win-win country anymore. We're in this horrible win-lose situation. So I think that you're right, Denise, that there are huge cultural aspects to our economy, and that story about how you compete is one aspect of that. Denise, thanks for the call. Very, very well said. Dave in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Thanks, Tom. I'm making a clarification on the reorganization of gun policy. On Friday's show, I had mentioned about how we might be able to reorganize our gun policies, and you had brought up that you liked your idea as well, but I didn't forsake your aspect of it. I just dropped it from the conversation due to time restraints.
Sure.
And then on the end of just taking your gun out the back door and shooting it up, I didn't necessarily mean that as a fact that if your property allows you to hunt out your back door, or allows you to go to property that's adjacent to a field or a forest that allows you to hunt, then you can go out your back door and hunt. But once you leave your front door, you need to hire a company to take your gun to where you'll be shooting, either at a lodge or a farm.
I remember your argument, Dave. And you know, it makes a certain amount of sense, and probably there are variations of it in other countries. I just think it's extremely unlikely that we'll see something like that promulgated in the United States. But you know, I think it's a good idea. Dave, thanks for the call. Gary in Kingmont, West Virginia. Hey, Gary, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom. Thank you. You're back in the fresh air of Portland, Oregon, huh?
Indeed. Yeah. So what's up?
Yeah. Well, I have to do it. Greed has no heart ever. It's our cancer in America. And it's kind of ironic. This is what you're talking about today. And we have, and let me, if I may, address the questions you present, because you asked, you threw the question out there, which was the right question. To me, in my humble opinion, what has happened to America is rather simple to me. It's that history has repeated itself. Mm-hmm. And greed has become more intentionally trenched. History has repeated itself. And culturally, and I'm not better people out there than me, but we seem to develop a culture of less gentlemen and less ladies that seem unable to deal with it. Mm-hmm. To me, that's what's happened.
Yeah, I don't disagree. And also, we have been collectively wounded. I mean, the billionaires have been massively benefited, but Reaganism has collectively wounded the American working class. And as a consequence, you've got all these people who have been harmed, who actually have, you know, have the in fact, there's a great piece in, I think it was the New York Times over the weekend, in the magazine section about, you know, how when the steel mills left, people lost not only their jobs and good livelihoods, but they also lost their sense of identity. You know, how badly we've all been wounded by this. And then once we are all experiencing, or many of us, you know, large chunks of the American workforce are experiencing the shock of Reaganism and, you know, the end of big government as we know it, and the end of the social safety net, all these kinds of things. The Republicans a year before last, a couple of years back, ending long-term unemployment benefits, for example, beyond, you know, 1 year, things like that. So then, you know, people look around and go, okay, who screwed me? And Donald Trump comes along and says, it was those nasty Wall Street bankers, and it was those nasty, you know, insiders, and it's the deep state, and, you know, and Steve Bannon, and we're going to deconstruct the state, right? Which is, you know, a metaphor for we're going to take apart America. And people go, well, okay, you know, it's not working right now, so sure, what the heck? You know, this is now not ignoring the fact that Donald Trump actually lost the popular vote by almost 3 million votes. But that said, still, you know, what got him at least as far as he is that a lot of people know that they've been wounded, that they've been injured by these policies. So anyhow, Gary, excellent points. Thank you. Ray in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Ray, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Well, let me start by saying thank you for your voice and all this craziness. You provide a great service, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, Ray.
The reason I'm calling is to expand on your opening story about the moving company situation, and it's an example that I call the racketeering of American business, and it's the health insurance business industry. We're originally from Canada, and we've lived here 22 years, been insured by a variety of different companies, and in all that time, over the hundreds of invoices, roughly two-thirds of them have always been incorrect, and never once have they been less than what we should have paid. They've always been more.
Right.
And, of course, those invoices are buried in impossibly complicated, you know, a web of charges. So it's a business strategy. It's a systematic bilking and overcharging of the American healthcare consumers. It's disgusting.
Yeah. It's also profitable. It's insanely profitable. And you're absolutely right, Ray. And this is what I was talking about. You get either one of two things happens, right? When you deregulate an industry, you either get the situation like we have with healthcare or with banking, where a very small number of very, very large companies come to basically own the entire marketplace, or you get what I'm experiencing in the moving industry,
which is where, you know, thousands of, quote, new competitors emerge. And on some of them are clearly not competing by providing good service. They're competing by lying to their customers and essentially, you know, ripping them off. Ray, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your calls, the news of the day, and my thoughts on all of the above right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Freddie in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Freddie, what's on your mind today?
Tom, first-time caller, and...
What happened, Freddie? Freddie? Freddie, I think I've lost you here. I'm going to put Freddie on hold here, and he's online. Oh, Freddie just vanished. Okay. Freddie, give us a call back, and we'll see what we can do here. Jenny in Asheville. What is that, Asheville, South Carolina? North Carolina? Jenny? What is going on? Hybrid number one. Okay. I'm going to put Jenny on hold. And let's try another one. Charles in Miami. Hey, Charles. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hey, Charles.
Hey, how you doing today, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
I'm just thinking about all of this stuff with Donald Trump. I really wanted to talk about him. But first of all, let's not forget that the Republicans are just sitting by idly. They're not doing anything. Paul Ryan isn't doing anything. Mitch McConnell is just letting everything slide. Because they're upset. I mean, they don't want to upset the cart, because I think their main agenda is basically, as long as he can pass his biggest tax break ever, that they're, you know, they're willing to deal with everything.
Yeah, and I think that they're going to support, the billionaires are going to support Trump as long as they think he's going to sign a tax break for them. But if it becomes obvious that he can't even pull that off, that's going to be the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency, in my opinion. That's the point at which most of the billionaires, probably the Mercer family excepted, are going to say, okay, we're pulling the plug.
But I think the reason why Trump is disassembling trying to disassemble the Iran deal, and he's done away with this restriction on Obamacare, where they're going to give you less coverage, and they're going to take away the subsidies, is because he's trying to make an argument that he inherited a mess. You know, and the Democrats, to me, they have to come out in full force. They have to do whatever and just make this a campaign slogan. Everything that he's done, that he's undoing, you know, Democrats made it better when Obama was there. You know, so basically, this is the fight. And, you know, and one last thing I wanted to say, as far as this monument, as far as these Confederate monuments, what do you think about building a wall like we did for the Vietnam veterans? And we can have a wall for the Confederates and for the Union soldiers, and we could put the narrative on there. That's right. You
know, Charles, there's a big difference. The people who went off to Vietnam, whether it was voluntarily or involuntarily via the draft, at least many of them believed that they were fighting for the United States of America. The Confederate soldiers were fighting against the United States of America.
And that is the narrative we should put on the wall.
Yeah, yeah. Never forget the treason that was committed in 1860 against the United States. I mean, that would be the way that I would take it if I was going to make any kind of a memorial, or if I was going to go around at all the Confederate war memorials all around the country and put a new plaque on them. Never forget the great treason. Never forget, you know, here stands a statue of Stonewall Jackson, a traitor to his nation. That, in my opinion, is how it should be handled. Charles, thank you for the call. Well said. Carol in Manassas, Pennsylvania. Hey, Carol, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Good show.
Thank you.
I'd like to list a few things that are different from when I was in school in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, like John, we never locked our doors. I grew up in a small, basically affluent Republican town. But, you know, we didn't have to lock our doors or cars. I went to school with the same kids for 12 years. Not one who graduated with me was obese. Not one.
Yep.
And we had no junk food in our town.
Yep.
None. But the biggest thing right now is here we are, the richest country in the world, and our president is allowing Americans to drink toxic wastewater. I mean, that is just...
Oh, and he's increasing the supply of it.
Yes, yes, I know. I mean, it also, back when I was young, taxes weren't a dirty word. I mean, it seemed like even Republicans like Eisenhower, you know, knew that you had to have taxes. You had to have revenue to build highways and bridges.
Eisenhower maintained a top tax rate of 91%.
Yeah, I know. And we got things done.
Yes.
But today, thanks to Grover Norquist or, you know, whatever, it's a dirty word. You can't mention taxes. You can't mention socialism. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous, and it's all from Reagan, and the marriage of Reagan with Powell, which I think was the first gay marriage. Anyway, they got it together, and they really destroyed this country over time.
Yeah. I think it's an ongoing process, but I don't disagree. Carol, thank you. William in Nine Mile Falls, Washington. Hey, William, what's on your mind?
Well, Tom, just to add to the conversation here is what's going on. To me, it's a matter of between computers knowing everything about you and advertising, it's proof advertising works. You know, when Frank Luntz gets his focus group together, after a couple of focus groups, he can honestly convince somebody that he's killing you for your own good, and they buy it.
Yeah.
You know, when Amazon merges with Walmart and Fox merges with Sinclair Broadcasting, you know, you're never going to get a bunch of news. You're just going to get what they want you to hear.
Yeah. Well, we're by and large not getting news right now. I'm by and large getting what they want us to hear. And but yeah, I think your point is well taken. And you know, those mergers are not being contemplated right now. But it's functionally the same thing. I mean, you've got all these giant corporations. They have interlocking boards of directors. You know, the CEOs are all members of the business roundtable, which is the 200 biggest companies in America, their CEOs. John Snow used to be the head of that. George W. Bush made him transportation secretary, you may recall. And it is a very powerful thing. The impact of advertising on us, the impact of all this media, but in particular, the biggest problem in my mind, Lee, is that our media is telling us what is going to be most profitable for the media rather than what is most useful or important for us to know in order to be functioning, high integrity, honest members of a democratic republic. And, you know, whether we're Democrats or Republicans, we are not being well served by our media. William, thank you for the call. We'll be back right after. When was the last time you looked forward to sitting at your desk all day? Since getting my new X chair, not only am I enjoying the time spent in my desk much more than ever, but I can't believe how much more productive I'm being. My X chair is unbelievably stylish, and thanks to all the ways that you can personalize it, it literally molds itself to my body. Trust me, this is not your grandfather's office chair. And because I don't need to keep having to take breaks or to stretch my back, I'm getting more done in a day than ever before. If you spend a lot of time in your office chair every day, then you need to try the X chair. In fact, here's a terrific deal just for my listeners. The makers of X-Chair want you to feel the X-Chair difference for yourself. So if you go to xchairtom.com, that's the letter X, chair, T-H-O-M.com, not only will they knock $100 off the price, but they'll even throw in a free footrest if you use the promo code Tom. Just go to xchairtom.com now. I love my X-Chair, and you will too. So check out xchairtom, that's X-Chair, T-H-O-M.com. Check out xchairtom.com and be sure to use THOM as the promo code for your $100 discount.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, liberals have brought us a lot. You look back over the history of the United States, you see, you know, liberals brought us the United States to begin with. Thomas Jefferson was a product of the Enlightenment. These guys were all pointing to the Enlightenment. So brought us literally the United States of America, brought us the right to free speech, brought us the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. All of them brought, liberals brought the end of slavery. Liberals brought the right to vote and expanded the right to vote, first to freed slaves, then to women. Liberals brought you the weekend. Liberals defined decent wages, workman's comp, workplace benefits, the vacation. Liberals brought you the weekend. I mean, literally, parental paid time off. Liberals brought you public education, free public education, and raised millions out of poverty. Science, medicine, rural electricity, writes Joshua Eric Turcotte over at the Quora website. And all of these things, even the GI Bill, which was passed after World War II, the Republicans fought against the GI Bill, which provided benefits to 8 million American veterans. More than 8 million of them used just the college benefits, as my father did. I can't think of anything that the Republicans have brought us, certainly in my lifetime, of any comparable benefit. And yet the Republicans are running around right now saying it's time to take down the New Deal and the Great Society. All this list of things that I just read. So with us on the line right now is Julio Rivera. He is the editorial director at Reactionary Times, columnist with Newsmax, right-wing news, and Politichicks, reactionarytimes.com, the website. Oh, yeah, it's Julio, is his Twitter handle. Hey, Julio, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Tom. I was listening to you there just for a moment, and I couldn't help but realize that you omitted the fact that the 13th, the 14th, and the 15th Amendments were...
Julio.
The Republican Party.
Credit
to liberals.
Hey, Julio.
That's not true.
Julio, can you pick up your phone? I can't hear you.
Okay.
Hi, Tom. Can you hear me better now?
Yes. Now I can hear you. So start over again. I couldn't hear you.
And I have to say this because I listened to what you said as we were leading into my segment. The 13th, the 14th, and the 15th Amendments were brought to America by the Republican Party.
When the Republicans were liberals. Yes, you're absolutely right. I'm talking liberal conservative, not Democrat Republican.
The other part of it, too, is who filibustered the Civil Rights Act in 1964 for 57 days?
Conservatives.
The Democrat Party. There was no switching of ideologies. That's such a big
It was conservatives. It was Southern conservatives. It was Strom Thurmond. I was alive then, Julio. I remember. They were conservatives.
Which parties? And you can't base him. You can't.
So please tell me anything that conservatives have brought us.
Saying that the entire thing switched. That's not true.
Julio, in the 66 years I've been on this planet, I cannot think of one single thing conservatives have brought us that has been a benefit to the United States. Can you please name one?
Really? Listen. Conservative reforms are the only thing that's going to bring back this.
Please name one.
You know, listen to the cutting taxes in the 80s. Cutting taxes in the 80s led to an economic boom.
No, it did not.
Are you kidding me?
No, yes, cutting taxes in the 80s led to the biggest crash since the Great Depression.
You guys got cutting taxes. Oh, hyperinflation, all these things. But there's no proof to it. In the 1980s, we grew by leaps and bounds.
We actually grew slower in the 80s than we did in the 70s, 60s, or 50s, Julio. Look it up.
Democrat John F. Kennedy as well. So it's not like it hasn't been done on both sides.
Julio, we grew
a blue dog Democrat.
You are completely reinventing history. First of all, John Kennedy.
You're reinventing history, my man.
John Kennedy campaigned on raising taxes on rich people by closing loopholes, dropping the top rate and closing the loopholes. He campaigned on it. He debated Richard Nixon on it. I may even have the audio to play for you.
Nobody disagrees with that. But the rates across the board should be brought down as they were in the 80s. Reagan gave tax cuts to every,
Reagan's cutting taxes exploded the deficit, Julio. Your choice. Which would you rather have? Lower taxes on billionaires
and
a huge deficit or no deficit?
Nobody's going to argue that. But that had a little bit more to do with Tip O'Neill.
But, Julio, so let me get this straight. Let me just get this straight. I just said, okay, in the last 66 years, can you think of anything that conservatives have brought us that has been a benefit to the United States? And you said basically tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires.
No, tax cuts for everyone.
Okay, tax cuts for everyone.
That's what we should have.
I would argue that
did
not do
a single...
In order to
make it more competitive for smaller and mid-sized businesses to compete with the large corporatists.
Then why have the smaller and mid-sized businesses been wiped out by big corporations?
The rich, but it's not because of Donald Trump, and it's not because of conservative policy.
So the only thing from the last 60 plus years that conservatives have done that has been, in your opinion, a benefit to America is cutting taxes in the 80s. Is that what you're saying?
How about the fact that we defeated communism? How about that? You want to give Reagan credit for that?
I think that you could safely say that was brought to you by liberals.
You're opposed to because you believe in communism and socialism. That's where the divide comes in, Tom.
Julio, you are unable to identify anything that conservatives have done for America.
No, I did. So, we cut taxes. We increased the military. We brought, you know, we ended the scourge of the USSR. I mean, I think that's a positive thing. We brought some semblance of, you know, their version of capitalism to Russia, but at least we did that. I mean, those are good things. We consistently fight for life. You know, you think that liberalism, which has killed millions and millions, it's been a genocide of the black community after Roe versus Wade. Do you think that that's something positive in this country? Why is the black community still only 13% of the population for the last 100 years? I'll tell you why, because of Planned Parenthood.
This is bizarre, Julio. So your solution, you're saying that the good thing that conservatives would do for America if they had an opportunity with regard to abortion is outlawing it altogether. Do I have that correct?
No, not outlawing it altogether. Give it back to the states. Let them decide how they want to run it. But
some people can live in
liberals nowadays. They want, you know, late term abortion up to the birth. That's inhumane.
So once again, Julio, you are unable to identify anything that conservatives have brought us.
Over and over again doesn't make it true. You know, I did identify. I identified three things.
No, and I'm disputing them. I'm saying that what, you know, the restrictions on abortion lead to actually more abortions, and they lead to, you know, greater dangers for women.
The
tax cuts that Trump brought us. If he keeps talking over me, just pot him down a little bit, please. The tax cuts that Bush brought us and that Reagan brought us just exploded the distance between very, very rich and very, very poor in America.
Bush was not as comprehensive, and he should have been more.
I'm not seeing anything here.
You know, Bush was a little bit more further to the left, obviously, than Reagan.
And then Steve Bannon comes along and says, yes, Trump is doing away with the CSRs because he wants to destroy Obamacare. He wants to destroy health care for Americans, for low-income Americans.
No, he wants to expand choices for Americans. And the interstate sale of insurance and taking away what's referred to as like either mandatory minimums or essential benefits, people should be able to purchase a la carte what they want. Why should I have to pay for a sex change for somebody across the country if I don't feel
because we're all in the same pool, Julio?
My religious values. Why should I have to pay for
abortion? Because we're all in the same pool. Why should I pay taxes when I don't have kids
in
schools?
We shouldn't be in the same pool. No, because being in the making one direct pool to me is a violation of the First Amendment.
What?
It's a violation of the First Amendment.
So you think that if somebody is drawing Social Security and you disagree with their lifestyle, that you shouldn't pay into Social Security?
Well, nobody said anything about Social Security. Now you're taking one.
Well, I'm taking your logic, which is, you know, you don't like that the government is helping somebody out that you don't like.
If I don't believe in, let's say I'm like Rick Santorum, and I don't believe in birth control. Rick Santorum has like 8 to 10 kids or something like that. If you don't believe in birth control, then why should you have to pay if it violates your First Amendment right to you know, freedom of religion?
So somebody who doesn't believe,
you're sinning,
somebody who doesn't believe
into a system that's providing birth control and abortion, that's wrong. That's morally wrong.
This is bizarre. Julio Rivera, reactionarytimes.com is the website. You can tweet him it's Julio. Julio, thanks for dropping by today.
Hey, thank you so much, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Good talking to you. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, so we've had this contest running on the show for a decade. If you can name even one good thing Republicans have done in my lifetime, I'll send you a book. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see, that was Julio. And this, you know, this whole long list, Clint Gold wrote a piece in the Tulsa World some years ago. This was in 1999. And he was talking about the various programs that have been brought to you. This is America, right? Brought to you by progressives. Whether it was progressive Abraham Lincoln or progressive Thomas Jefferson, but, you know, the modern-day progressives, Social Security, Medicare, every single one of these programs was opposed by conservatives. Every single one. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the Peace Corps, unemployment insurance, welfare both for the poor and for corporations, civil rights. Actually, the conservatives supported welfare for corporations, and they continue to. civil rights, student grant and loan programs, safety laws like OSHA, environmental laws like the EPA. In fact, conservatives right now are trying to undo these regulations, trying to make America less safe, trying to make our air more poisonous because it's profitable for the people who fund them. Environmental laws, prevailing wage laws, the right to collective bargaining, which, by the way, unions brought about paid medical insurance, paid vacations and pensions and things like that. That's all the result of the labor movement, which was liberals. Workers' compensation, the Marshall Plan. It blows my mind that conservatives actually opposed the Marshall Plan. Conservatives opposed the GI Bill, paid vacations, paid medical insurance, a flood disaster insurance, school lunch programs, women's rights. In every single one of these cases, conservatives have opposed them. The Fair Labor Standards Act, which established a 40-hour week and put child labor laws into place, established a minimum wage, all opposed by conservatives. The FHA and HUD, which created, you know, public housing and built 44 million residential homes. Before World War II, about 70% of America were renters. By the mid-1970s, about 70% of America was homeowners. Now, that has been declining. It's in the 60s now. It's been steadily declining as a result of Reaganomics, but, you know, it's still there. Farm conservation subsidies, USDA programs, the Farmers Home Administration, small flood control lakes. There's more than 3,000 just in Oklahoma, for example. Rural water districts, rural electricity, the REA, Rural Electrification Administration. The GI Bill, millions of returning veterans. The Republicans totally opposed the GI Bill. Why? Because they thought that all these veterans coming back to the United States would be a source of cheap labor. Throw them into the labor markets. The cost of labor is going to collapse, right? It's going to destroy the unions. Instead, Democrats passed a law saying, no, they can go to college. 8 million Americans, people like my dad and Louise's dad, both went to college on the GI Bill, creating millions of entrepreneurs. For the unemployed GI, there was $20 a week for a year, which was basically a lot of money back then. I mean, we're today maybe the equivalent of $300-$400. The Veterans Administration, 2 million home loans, and it goes on. You know, for the bankers, liberals saved the banking industry with the creation of the FDIC and the FSLIC, insuring deposits. They saved Wall Street with the creation of the Securities and Exchange Commission. These were things Franklin Roosevelt did in the 1930s. And it goes on and on. I mean, it's just, so what have Republicans brought us? I can think of nothing. And I just, you know, and not only do I disagree with Julio on, well, they brought us tax cuts in the 80s, and that was a wonderful thing. The tax cuts in the 80s just made inequality in the United States worse. And and Reagan tripled the national debt. Reagan ran up more debt in his 8 years in the White House than all the other presidents of the United States, if you take non-wartime presidents of the United States, combined. That's how much debt Reagan ran up with this tax cut. And, you know, we had a banking collapse, the savings and loan bank, industry. Reagan deregulated the SNLs in anticipation of then shortly thereafter deregulating Wall Street. He deregulated the SNLs, and so, boom, they started behaving unethically. They started being driven by greed, as it were. And guess what? The SNLs went down in flames. You know, there was a complete collapse of the entire savings and loan industry. So did the Republicans learn that lesson? Bill Seidman came in, and, in fact, I commend you to recommend that you go over to YouTube and check out Bill Seidman's he passed away a little while ago, but at Grand Rapids State College, I think it is, Bill Seidman, the guy who ran the agency that basically, you know, they nationalized the savings and loans banks, the SNLs, and then slowly reprivatized them in the 80s as a result of this huge disaster Reagan made. And you would think that the Republicans would look at that, or the conservatives would look at that and go, you know, okay, well, we deregulated the SNLs, bad behavior followed, and a crash of the SNLs followed that. And you'd think that they'd think, you know, well, so maybe we shouldn't do the same thing with the big Wall Street banks. But sure enough, here we go, 1999, 2000, let's deregulate the big Wall Street banks. And guess what happens in 2007? I mean, it takes about 7-8 years, right? It did in 1921, Warren Harding deregulated the banks. In 1929, they crashed. In 2000, you know, we deregulated the banks. 2007, 8, 9, they crashed. What a surprise. What have Republicans brought us? Really? Nothing.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Back with your calls. Back, Tom Hartman here with you, and boy, what a day. What an amazing time that we are living in. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Hey, not too much, Tom. Hey, I want to answer the question about what's changed in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
One very noticeable thing, and actually I recollected it this weekend when I was listening to an interview with John Kasich. And he was asked about the consequences of the United States pulling out of the Iran deal. And he said that, you know, countries like China and Russia, well, we risk countries like China and Russia, authoritarian states, of kind of, you know, emerging to replace America as, you know, a responsible party.
Yep.
And, you know, but what he got me thinking about, I mean, I'm not, you know, I would never vote for John Kasich, okay? But he got me thinking about Kasich voters and Trump voters and how in America, a lot of people, they actually don't like to think for themselves. They actually prefer authoritarianism and being told what to do. And I really started noticing this when George Bush was president. So I don't want to blame, you know, everything on Trump. I think Trump's just taking advantage of that.
Oh, I agree. And, And this is John Dean pointed this out in his book, Conservatives Without a Conscience, that or Conservatives Without Conscience, I think is the title, that about 20% of people, not just Americans, but about 20% of people have what are called authoritarian tendencies. A very small percentage of that 20%. You know, way fewer than 1% of the population are authoritarian leader types. And the majority are authoritarian follower types. And they are people who want to follow an authoritarian leader, which is what you're describing, Dave.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add, I mean, I don't know if you intended that for this, but since I started listening to you, you've convinced me that a lot of it is because of economic factors. See, I never really bought off on that before until I started listening to you, and I think it's true. I think the more perilous our economic condition is, the more we tend towards authoritarianism as a kind of solution, as a kind of a fix.
Yeah.
And it really scares me. It's very troubling.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Dave. And I also share your concern. Thanks a lot for the call, Dave. Rob in Minnesota. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I work in the transportation industry, and it's where I heard that you're having a problem with a trucking company.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Most transportation companies are very conservative Republicans, and most of the truck drivers out here our conservative Republicans. You get 10 of them put together in any one situation, and I can guarantee you, there's only one or two of me and a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, the way I wanted to be able to take and finally get it to you is where, under the circumstances, guess what? You're a liberal. You've been blackballed.
Could be. I don't think that this company is singling me out because I'm a liberal, though, because when I went on Yelp and read the reviews, there's like, you know, more than 20 people saying that they've had the exact same experience that we've had. I think that they're just running a business model that is, you know, less than straightforward. And
if you really want to push it a little bit farther, every single truck out here has an ICC number on the door. Call up the Interstate Commerce Commission, make a complaint. Might be able to take and make a move a little bit.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, thank you for that, Rob. Appreciate the call. Jerry in Asheville, Jenny, excuse me, in Asheville. Asheville's in North Carolina, right? Jenny?
Hello. Hello.
Hi, Jenny.
Hello. Hey, Tom.
Yes, you're on the air. We made it. What's up?
This is Jerry. Jerry in Asheville, North Carolina. Okay, thank you. I'm just calling because I haven't heard anybody put together the fact that, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Donald Trump became president, even though he really didn't want to be, but if he became president, what he wanted to do was make sure that what was in it for him, and it was getting rid of the estate tax was a big thing. And I feel that what he's done by removing, you know, taking, you know, some, what, 10 million people and getting rid of the payments that they're going to get and make it that the premiums are going to go up for them, taking basically that $7 billion that should be going there, he's going to put that towards the deficit so that whenever he gets rid of the estate tax for himself and 1.6 of the population, then he can say, oh, well, we didn't raise the deficit because we made sure that we got that money back in there. Although, as I understand it, that's actually not going to be the way it works. But I think that's the way he thinks it'll work, as much as he thinks. I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
I think that you're right, Jenny. And I also think that this piece on over at Talking Points Memo this morning really... it was a real eye-opener for me, the idea that Donald Trump does not understand win-win negotiations. He only understands win-lose. And the only way that he knows that he's winning is when he can see someone else losing. He has to see the other person lose, be humiliated, be trashed. It's why he doesn't pay contractors. It's why it explains not only his business practices, but also his politics. He doesn't understand win-win strategies. And therefore doesn't pursue them. He doesn't know how to do it. And I think that you're absolutely right that basically he's taking down health care for average working Americans so that he can fund tax breaks, in this case the estate tax and others, for the billionaire class. I think you're absolutely right. Very well said. Jenny, thank you for the call.
Coming up tomorrow, we'll have the latest news and information from Wall Street and Main Street, all points in between. Plus, best of the rest of the news. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, show up, participate, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.